Totally Hockey Show at the 2019 IIHF Ice Hockey World Championship. The rest day. Hello there. It's a quiet day at the World Championships. The group stage is over and the quarters await. So while the tournament catches its breath, today on Totally Hockey, we take the chance to catch up on one of hockey's most influential figures, Igor Larionov, a man who, in a career that spanned from the mid-70s to the new millennium, from Soviet Green Unit to the Detroit Red Wings, changed the course of the sport on and off the ice.
Dropped it, Larionov, in Larionov.
Boy, there is no panic in Igor Larionov.
And the gold medal belongs to the Soviet Union. The
Soviets put on a classic display of almost no-touch passing right there. The puck was hardly on their stick and it was gone.
Still there!
Igor Larionov in overtime.
Now in the corner, taken by Larionov. Makes a pass. Larionov cuts in. What a stop. Rebound. Score! Igor Larionov.
Well, to explain a little about why Larionov is so special, we're joined, first of all, by our very own history guy, award-winning hockey writer, Lucas Aykroyd. Lucas, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
First off, why is Larionov so important?
Well, he was both a playmaker, some people call him the Russian Wayne Gretzky, and he was a trailblazer as far as helping to initiate the exodus of Russian players from the old Soviet Union at the end of the late 1980s. So he was very special on many levels.
Now, at the start of this show, we talked about him as possibly being one of the most influential figures in the last 50 years of the sport. Partly that's because of the way he played, the way he approached hockey on the ice, but it's also about what he did off it.
Absolutely, yeah. He changed the way Russian players are perceived, really. And when you look at the Russian greats in today's league, be it Yevgeny Malkin, Alexander Ovechkin, Nikita Kucherov, all those guys owe their careers in some measure to Igor Larionov.
He racked up the medals through the 80s. Olympic golds in 84, 88, World Championships, four golds there, 82, 83, 86, and 89. And then at the turn of the decade, just as the political situation, I guess, is beginning to change in the Soviet Union, he finally makes a long-awaited move to, it was Vancouver who
it drafted was the Vancouver Canucks, yes.
Right, and they drafted him back in when, 85?
They drafted him at a time in the mid-80s when there wasn't really any imminent prospect of Soviet players leaving apart from defection. And that really didn't kick in until Alexander Mogilny jumped ship from the Soviet team at the 1989 World Championship in Stockholm and made his way to Buffalo. But Mogilny in a very different position. He was a brash 18-year-old, and whereas Larionov was a very established star in his late 20s with a family. Two different worlds.
And he was quite outspoken about the Soviet system and the way that the team was being run and the fact that he was being denied. The move that he wanted to make, I believe they took his passport away, prevented him from going on tours with the Soviet team.
He was considered a bit of a suspicious figure. I mean, he spoke English. He would, you know, make attempts to communicate with Canadian players. I believe he hung out with Wayne Gretzky and Paul Coffey after Canada defeated the Soviets in the 1984 Canada Cup semifinal. So he was always interested in the West. And of course, in the, you know, the fairly repressive mid-80s Soviet Union, that raised some eyebrows.
How was he finally able to make the move to the West?
Well, it was a long process of negotiation. I mean, you have to remember it in the context of Mikhail Gorbachev and the policies of glasnost and perestroika. The Soviets were slowly, reluctantly opening up to the West. And there was this long-standing theory among Soviet athletic scientists that players had peaked by age 28. And it just so happened that Igor Larionov, along with his line mates Vladimir Krutov and Sergei Makarov, were all in that age bracket. So the Soviets were also looking for some hard currency, and it was really just a confluence of things coming together, you know, along with Larionov's own outspokenness about the fact that, you know, they were not being treated in a way that worked anymore in the late 1980s.
Well, Igor went on to have a tremendously successful career in the NHL, winning three Stanley Cups with Detroit, the first of which I think ended a half a century of title drought for the Red Wings.
The Wings hadn't won since the 50s, so it was a long time coming.
Okay, maybe 40 then. Yeah, 40 years or so, but a long time. Well, Larionov won his third Stanley Cup with the Red Wings in 2002 and only finally hung up his boots in 2006. He now has a variety of other interests, including his own wine business, but he's still very much involved in the sport. Indeed, this week he's arrived in Bratislava to catch up on Russia's progress at this World Championship. In a quiet moment, when Russia weren't slamming seven past the Swedes, we asked him about an eventful life that's had one constant: hockey. Igor, thank you so much for joining us here on the Totally Hockey Show.
Thank you for having me for today's podcast. And obviously, it's a kind of pinnacle of the season to have a World Championships end of the season in Bratislava, in Slovakia. It's maybe the best hockey besides the Olympics, but it's exciting. So I'm looking forward for the rest of the tournament and more exciting games. And most important, to see the joy that the hockey players give it to the people of around the world, hockey fans.
You've had a life surrounded by hockey. Now you're involved in all sorts of other things, in sports and other areas, in winemaking. But hockey itself, when you look back on all the things that you brought to the game, what would you consider your biggest legacy?
You know, you play the game of hockey to entertain people. And my game is to make people to return to watch hockey games. That's how you that's how I can describe my game. So to be unselfish, to be unpredictable, to be creative, and create the nice masterpieces during the games, and create some goals, create some passes. That kind of legacy I hope I left behind. So, as a player,
your career spanned what I think 27 years. How has hockey changed in that time, and indeed since you retired?
Well, it's the game changing kind of rapidly. So every year, like certain different rules and different equipment, new technology comes in, and then the game becoming more like quicker and faster. So there are more young players playing the game now. You can see like a lot of that things happening in the last like 5-6 years. But one thing is, I'm glad and I'm happy. So there's like a lot of young guys with a high potential and high skill coming to the league, and I mean, I'm talking about NHL, and they're making the game even more like beautiful to watch.
I've seen interviews with you before where you've talked about maybe the fact that the game's not creative enough or as much as you'd like it to be. With that in mind, how do you view the current Russia national team?
Well, they have a lot of skill up front, They have really good goaltending. So defensively, they okay. So if you're talking about like serious analysis, you know, so but offensively, so this team is very dangerous. So they have some players who can score the goals, who can make something happen. Like we can talk about Kucherov and Malkin and Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and it's Dadonov and Gusev. So there's a lot of guys who can do a lot of damage up front. So and plus they can play the game, which is it's hard to stop. So that's what to me it's all about the team. So if you play the game offensively, if you play the game at a high speed and a high level of skill. So then, obviously, you know, you can score the goals. You can be better than any other team. But by the end of the day, so the fans who's going to watch the game, so they're going to be winners because they want to come and watch this type of hockey.
If you'd never played the game, the sport in Russia would be different. It would be, I think, different in terms of the way that it's played also. The very fact that you broke open the whole possibility for players to move abroad. How does that make you feel, knowing that you've had that much impact on a national pastime?
You know what? It's hard to say that. It's hard to estimate like what happened in the past, like 30 years ago, when we kind of opened the gates to play National Hockey League and made some impact on of the game like internationally because of the way we play the game in the Soviet days, and we're trying to bring that style like, to the North America. So and fortunately, it happened when the Russian Five first ever in the history of the game was assembled in Detroit. And we got the Stanley Cup, and we kind of show the world, show North American fans like how the game's supposed to be played, and we kind of left that legacy to the young players and the game. You know, it's a lot of players, been a lot of teams been following our steps and our style, and that's why the game is more like internationally with a lot of European players coming to play in North America, even North American players like talking about Patrick Kane, Johnny Gaudreau, and Jonathan Taves, and some other players who've been playing National Hockey League, so they play in the same kind of similar style, which is fun to watch.
Those guys probably all think they train hard and sacrifice for the sport, but from what I understand, it's got nothing compared to what you went through when you were coming through.
I can tell you a lot of stories about that, but at the same time, you know, I had like my experience of like both sides of the kind of business, you know, like a Soviet way to train and the North American way to train and prepare for the games. So, but I guess I've been fortunate to be playing like 27 years and a half back home and half in North America, plus playing great hockey. And obviously, it's I like what I see right now. And as long as I can see the game developing the right way, so the teams are playing good hockey, that's what the game all about. So it's all about defense. It's all about scoring goals. It's all about express yourself and show some skill.
Are the stories true? No days off, or maybe a couple of days off a year, 11 hours a day training?
We're going back to the history again, you know. So that's the, well, we spent, like I spent 8 seasons back with the Red Army days, and when you got only 24 days off and the off season and the train, and the train 3-4 times a day for like almost 10 months or 11 months a year, and then plus 8 seasons I was there. So it's crazy, but it's, you know, it's, you look back and so you got some regrets. You know, regrets of missing a lot of things in life, you know, especially like, you know, like the hockey is a part of, it's a part of our life, but it's not, that's not like 24/7. So that's what I got the freedom to go to NHL at age 29 and enjoy that kind of part of that like hockey business and normal life.
But even in those days, being on the ice kind of represented your own freedom within that very rigid structure. If we could send you back for one day to a day of hockey, whether it would be a Stanley Cup final playoff or an Olympic medal or something like that, or even just training with your old Red Army teammates, where would you go?
You know what, it's really hard to separate, you know, like it's a history and it's a success, and also it's a commitment and dedication, in this sense, when you accomplish something big, you know, it doesn't really matter. So it's a World Championships or Olympics or Stanley Cup. It's a special. So obviously, you're talking about the back in the day. So you didn't make any money. So you know, I would like to get those money back. You know, what we've done in developing the game and the winning the championships. But when you go to the grind with you soldiers at the National Hockey League for 82 games marathon, and then 2 months of like a hardcore hockey in the playoffs. It's when you are reaching that summit after like 4 rounds of like playoffs, it's a hard, very, very hard like trophy to get. So it's a balance. It's kind of, it's really hard to point one, you know, when you reach that summit and lift that trophy or put the gold medal on your neck. So obviously it's a joy and you fulfill your goal. And but I can't really tell you which one is more precious.
Igor, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Igor Larionov, Lucas, still lacing up and taking to the ice. In fact, when I asked him if he was skating much these days, he said that he'd been on the ice about a week ago, and it was that game. Do you know when Vladimir Putin was skating round and tripped over? He was there.
Really?
Yeah. One last thing then. Well, we talked about his impact in terms of breaking the ice for Russian talent in North America. On the ice, what made him so special for you?
He was such a cerebral player. You often hear coaches talking about how we need to keep it simple. We need to get gritty. We need to dump it in. We need to play physical. And that's really prevalent in North America. Larionov was almost the opposite. I mean, he thought the game. When he played in Detroit, he used to like to play chess with the great Czech goaltender Dominik Hasek. Back in the Soviet Union, rather than bulking up at the buffet, would have a few vegetables because he felt he played better when he was at a lighter weight. And, you know, he compared his play with the KLM line to a jazz improvisation. So really a whole different paradigm for hockey, but I think a very influential one, and not just for Russian hockey, but even for the way the game is being played right now in 2019. There's so much more emphasis on puck possession than there was, say, 15 or 20 years ago. There's room for smaller players to shine in the game. You look at Nikita Kucherov, not a giant. Jack Hughes, the prospective number one overall pick in the NHL draft, also a smaller guy. Patrick Kane, who won last year's scoring title. And Igor Larionov, in some ways, is a template for many of those guys.
And for anyone who never really saw him play, is there one game that you would suggest they go and have a look online at?
Well, if you're a Russian fan, you would want to look up the 1981 Canada Cup Final, where the Soviet Union beat Canada 8-1.
They are standing and they are cheering. Team Canada, skating around the ice. I tell you now, we're going to have a lively night in the Forum.
It was a best-on-best competition. The final was at the Montreal Forum, and it was pretty devastating for anyone who saw it. I was 6 years old at the time, and that is my first big international hockey memory. And I really, at the time, being six and, you know, not the most astute commentator yet, but this is a team for Canada which had Wayne Gretzky, Marcel Dion, Guy Lafleur, so many icons of the sport. And, in those days, you really didn't know much about the Soviets. They were like men from Mars, you know, these robots sent down to wreak havoc. And they really did. The Soviets were outshot 12-4 in the first period. The great Vladislav Tretiak held the Russians in goal. And then Larionov opened the scoring for the Soviets in the second period.
Out in front of the shot, they score! Larionov got that pass. The defense got trapped down at the other end, and it paved the way to the goal.
Added the sixth goal as well, and still, to this day, probably the most lopsided defeat Canada has ever suffered in international play.
Kuznetsov, of course, as the puck is golfed on the ice, the game is over. The Soviet Union has defeated Team Canada 8-1 in the final sudden-death game of the Canada Cup.
But also a textbook example of Soviet hockey in Igor Larionov's prime.
Beautiful. Lucas, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you.
Well, listener, we'll be back tomorrow to report on the teams making history at this year's World Championship. The quarterfinals: Sweden, Finland, Czech Republic, Germany, Canada, Switzerland, and Russia, USA. Don't forget to rate and review us, or share and subscribe. And of course, download the IIHF app if you haven't done already to keep up to date on everything from the Ice Hockey World Championship. We'll see you next time on Totally Hockey.
The Totally Ice Hockey Show is a Mighty Knees Media production in association with In Front.